Well, welcome once again. It's been a little while. It's a Gents Confab podcast. As always, it's James, and I'm alongside my good friend, Mr. Jonathan. Jonathan, how are you?
I'm doing very well, James. And we're smoking wonderful cigars today.
This is what will be the first of several podcasts that we do where we have just some absolutely delicious cigars.
Yep.
All thanks to a wonderful event called the Connecticut Barn Smoker, which we attended this past weekend. It's a fantastic event, fantastic cigars. It's always nice to be in a large group of people who enjoy cigars, barbecue, and learning what's going on with our favorite, I would say, by far, cigar provider, distributor, creator, Drew Estates.
Yep.
Mr. Jonathan Drew, who was there. We'll talk a little bit about kind of the panel that he did, which was great, in a barn, which is great. So, of course, it's very fitting that today we are in a barn, my new barn. Well, it's an old barn, but it's new to me. We call it the Marn.
The Marn. It's a man barn.
Exactly. A big upgrade over the shed from last year. So
we've got space to sprawl out now.
And we have comfy seating.
That's true. Wonderful couches. Thanks to your old living room furniture.
That's right.
So, as James said, you know, we just came back from the Barn Smoker event. So we figured this would be the perfect time to re-kick off our Gents Confab podcast. Especially now that we have some delicious cigars to hold us over for the next couple podcasts.
And it's not holding over, it's trying not to smoke them in between, I think.
That will be quite difficult. Today... we're smoking some Florida Sun Grown by Drew Estate, which my wrapper came off a little too easily.
I had a little wrapper issue with the top of mine as well.
Yeah.
Now, this is one of their newer cigars.
Yes.
The Florida Sun Grown. It is, you know, it's got a nice look to it. It's got a dark, very dirty leaf. I would say dirty. I wouldn't say sticky. I wouldn't say...
Oily.
Just dirty, which yeah. I like. I think this is almost like the Esteli. What's the one I really like?
Oh, my God. Now I forget.
But that was one of my
favorites.
Nico Rustica, yes. Rustic, dirty.
Right.
That's probably not, you know, what you should think of, but I do. When I think rustic, I think dirty.
Dirty.
Disgusting.
I mean, I'm a little sad that my wrapper towards my end that goes in my mouth has come off a little easily.
It did. Well, we both did a straight cut.
Yep.
And both of us had that same problem.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe if we would have devoted a bit more energy to putting that end in the mouth beforehand, I didn't really... so maybe we could have kept the leaf together a little
That's
bit
true.
Better.
Yeah, I don't know.
But yes, that is a tad disappointing, but spicy, getting spice.
Getting a lot of earth.
Yes. Earthy spice, I think, is the best way to put it right now. Peppery.
Really? You're getting a lot of peppery?
I'm getting pepper. What are you getting?
I'm just getting dirt. I mean, it's not bad. I'm not saying, like, it's gross dirt. I'm just getting earthy. Like, I'm getting tobacco.
I'm getting tongue spice myself. The smoke, the draw, the definite upside to this cigar is clearly the draw, I think, so far, which is exceedingly easy.
And it produces a crap ton of smoke.
Which we love.
Like all Drew Estates. All right, okay, fine. I get a little bit of pepper on the tongue. But, like, it subsides really easily.
Well, it's not offensively peppery, but it definitely I'm getting pepper.
Like, your Nika Rusticas are much more peppery than this.
That's correct. But they're maybe not as earthy.
Definitely not as earthy.
So, there you go. Makes sense. So, this is the second time we've attended the Barn Smoker now.
Yep.
We went to the first one that they ever held, which was 2 years ago. We missed the last year. And now we were back this year. In terms of the format of it, not a whole lot of change.
Nope.
you know, I think the first thing to be said is that the value of this is really outstanding. And right. this is something that we talked about the first time we went, when we came back from the first one, when we were at the second one that we went to this past weekend, and now having been back and having some time to talk about it ourselves, amongst ourselves, as they might say. Mm-hmm. And so the ticket itself for the Barn Smoker is $90.
Yeah, after all the taxes, it's like 95, 97, whatever.
Which is fine. Right. And now, so you're getting access to the Barn Smoker,
yep.
where you get the knowledge.
You get a free food.
Free barbecue.
Right.
This year, they got 3 drink tickets, which was something
Amazing.
We did not get.
Correct. All we had was a...
Tasting.
A tasting, which was really a 2-ounce shot of Angel's Envy, mm-hmm. which obviously is very delicious, but from going from that little tasting to... 3 beers,
mm-hmm.
plus all you can drink, soft drinks, water, Monster Energy drink.
And of course, we did not make the mistake that we made the first time of not bringing any alcohol ourselves.
Correct.
We brought a very nice bottle of Basil Hayden's.
Yes.
Which was good with every cigar that we had.
Mm-hmm.
And we got to share the bottle just amongst ourselves because we didn't bring any cups. Maybe next year, cups.
Yeah. I really thought there was going to be cups there for some reason.
And we also got to not have to share our table.
Correct, because nobody likes us.
Nope. I don't know what it is about us that is so offensive to everyone, John, but...
Apparently something.
Something is offensive.
But, you know, it's fine.
Scary. I don't know.
We had the ashtray to ourselves,
mm-hmm.
or the ash bucket to ourselves. So that was nice. That was a positive. But it was a little sad that nobody came to sit with us. I felt like the kid who got picked last for everything.
Which neither of us really were.
Right.
So it was a little disconcerting.
Well.
But it's okay. We
had to fail every now and then.
We had a great time, as is evidenced by how positive our talking about it has been so far. So the 90, that just gets you in the door. Then you do have to pay an extra $10.
Right.
For the cigars. But.
Which that was new, because the first year that didn't happen.
That was included. But to pay an extra $10. Is more than worth it.
For because 10 cigars?
10 Drew Estate cigars, which came with their own little Boveda humidification packet.
Yep.
The retail on the sticks alone are 9 to 12, maybe more.
Right, per stick.
Per stick, if you're getting them per stick. Obviously, box would be a little different. But, you know, some of these you can't even really find in a box.
Yeah.
You know, these T-52s, some of the Ligas.
The Serie A.
Correct. But a delicious assortment of cigars that were fresh and were given to us fresh. You know, clearly they had been kept,
mm-hmm.
Immaculately wherever they had been. I had, I believe 4 during the time we were there. I think you had 3.
Yeah, I had 3.
And each stick was incredible, but I do think...
There was a clear winner.
There was a definite winner, Jan, and it was the Pappy Van Winkles.
Oh my God. Heaven.
Yes.
It was heaven. Pappy Van Winkle, I believe it was a barrel fermented cigar, which they had a Maduro wrapper on top, dark Maduro, had a regular brown wrapper on the bottom, and it smelled like the inside of a bourbon barrel.
Yeah, I mean, I tweeted out that it was as if you had crawled into... a bourbon barrel, and we're just smelling the deliciousness
yep.
of the fermentation process. How they were able to capture that so immaculately, I don't really know, but they did a hell of a job.
Well, I wonder if Drew Estate had released the Smoking Monk collection, which I still have like quite a few that's supposed to pair well with different beers.
Yep.
I wonder if that was kind of like... the beginnings of that, because then they dropped the Smoking Monk, and that's no longer a thing. But, I mean, that Pappy Van Winkle, the only downside of that cigar was that I will never smoke that for the first time ever again. That was one of the greatest cigars I've ever smoked in my life.
Just from the draw, from the scent to the draw, to the ash, to the smoke, I mean, everything about it was incredible.
Right. The label.
Even the label looked great. I mean, I love a crusty old man on my cigar
labels.
That's true. I love crusty old men in general, usually.
Pappy.
Yeah. But yeah, that was the clear highlight and winner of the cigars that we had at the event. Because it was just... it was intoxicating in a way that you're, you know, I never thought of it the way that you just put it, that the only bad part is that we'll never have it again for the first time.
It's true.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
I think that is the only negative to be taken out of that cigar experience. So, if you ever find yourself somewhere where you can get one of these, get one immediately. Get two.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's worth it.
100% worth it. And like I said, if I see a box of that, number one, I mean, I haven't really checked anywhere. I will buy it. If it's on sale, I'm 100% buying it. Like that, I could go with an entire humidor filled with Pappy Van Winkles.
There's a lot worse ways to stock a humidor, my friend.
But, you know, every year they do give you at least one flavored cigar.
Yes.
Right? Which was the natural that we had.
Correct. Which...
I was disappointed by it. I didn't like it.
I mean, I liked... if it was a standalone by itself and I wasn't drinking anything, I think that, yeah, I wouldn't have liked it very much. But I will say that having it with the bourbon,
yep.
It was nice to get a little bit of that. I think some of the smoke and flavor from the bourbon counteracted the sweetness, which I think is another thing that I had tweeted, actually. I thought that was a nice pairing. By itself, I mean, yeah, I'm not a huge fan of flavored cigars. Neither of us are.
No. Well, I think, you know, the big thing is Drew Estate's acid cigars. A lot of people there love the acid cigars. So, for them, I think this was perfect. For me, it felt like I was smoking syrup at some points, which I just, no. I mean, I love their tabacs because, I mean, coffee-infused cigars, give me more.
Well, as we've said, our previous favorite cigar ever...
Mm-hmm.
And still right there, probably with the Pappy, has got to be the Red Eye.
Oh, yep.
Which is a delicious smoke that you can't... this is another one where it's hard to get. It's not around everywhere. They are expensive. You can usually only get them by the box, maybe in a 5-pack.
Mm-hmm.
And the 5-pack will still probably set you back $35-$40. Totally worth it, because it's another delicious, delicious cigar, which we have sung the praises of many times.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I just in terms of, yeah, that was not a fantastic cigar. The really long one that we had.
That was a Serie A.
That was very good.
Yeah. Oh, it was good the first time we had it.
Yeah.
It was good the second time. It's just overall, I mean, it's a quality cigar. Drew Estate makes quality cigars.
And that's something that, not that you can't, I mean, you could tell that even if you didn't go to a barn smoker and actually see the process. And one of the most, one of the big takeaways that you get going to these events is the passion for which Jonathan Drew, who started the company himself and lived in Nicaragua in the shop,
yeah,
in his shop for 14 or 16 years in order to make the dream work.
Right.
And he is, I think I likened him to, he's the Paul Heyman of cigars. So if you're familiar with Paul Heyman, who is famous, of course, in wrestling circles, which is one of the other circles we traffic in quite a bit, he's the Paul Heyman of cigars. He's an advocate for not only his own cigars, but for the industry as a whole.
And he really was.
And that's something that I didn't... the first time we went, maybe I was just more focused on hearing about Jonathan, because the few things that I had read about him... seemed like he had a very interesting story to tell about himself,
yep,
and how he got into the business and everything else, which he certainly does. There's more than a few articles. There's been a recent one, actually, in Cigar Aficionado that came out about a month ago that I recommend anybody read if they want to get the whole down low on Jonathan. But he was so complimentary of the houses that he feels are doing cigars right. I think Oliva was one of them. Perdomo. But, you know, just giving credit where credit's due to giving a good product. It wasn't about him putting down other companies or other brands. It was about talking about how his process works and why he feels that he delivers a superior cigar experience, right, which, as we've said so many times, yes.
but like, even what he said in the barn itself on that, you know, he's not the top cigar. He knows he's not the top cigar. That's not what he's trying to be. But he's quality all the way through.
No, he knows he's not a Davidoff or you know, one of these guys. Oh, here, we're drinking today. Moscow Mule.
Yes,
while we still
thank you,
can,
James.
Before Mueller takes it away. Nice on a hot day inside the barn.
Ah, oh, yes, it is.
But yeah, that was again. So, as part of the barn smoker experience, you're able to see the process of how a cigar is made. And the station that Jonathan Drew is stationed at is the fermenting barn. And, you know, you see the tobacco leaves overhead, and he talks about the process of how, you know, what grade of tobacco leaf you use for what, and how, you know, what's going to be used for a filler, what's going to be used for a wrapper, all that kind of stuff, which is very interesting. And the fact that he knows so much of it is, you know... again, goes to show how invested in the product he actually is.
Well, and it seemed like from the first barn smoker to this one, he dropped a lot more knowledge on us. It wasn't a lot of generalizations. It was, here's why you need a tobacco plant to have both the filler, or all the filler, the binder, and the wrapper.
Correct. But he was talking, you know, he was talking a lot about the pilons.
Yep.
Which I don't think that he spent a lot of time talking about the last time.
No.
Which is basically, you know, how you store the tobacco in the warehouses after it's been harvested and aged.
Well, and another thing, too, was the whole, like, $200,000 to $500,000 cigar humidifiers that they have for the pilons in Nicaragua that other companies use.
Oh, the freezers.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
To age their tobacco. Right.
Yes, it's the high-tech way to do it.
Yes.
And he said that, you know, that works great for premium cigar companies because they're able to regulate humidity. Dew point, he said, was particularly important, which I thought was interesting because I wouldn't have thought by my own that would be, I guess, something you need to pay a lot of attention to. I thought it'd just be humidity. But yeah, no, talking about these freezers that the companies use and how obviously with Drew Estate, they're still using these barns.
Traditional barns.
And about how, you know, he has to make a bet basically on an entire crop before the crop's even up in order to guarantee that he's going to have enough of the binders, the wrappers, and the fillers to make X amount of cigars for the label.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, another interesting point that he touched on was the whole sticking to what you're good at.
Yes.
You know, with his whole dream of wanting to own a tobacco farm and do everything himself and people just telling him, well, that's not your specialty. Stick to the whole producing and manufacturing and selling cigars. And, I mean, he does an amazing job. Let the tobacco farms grow their tobacco.
And another interesting thing to point out is that the first year that we went, they had just announced that they were bought by Swisher.
Mm-hmm.
I think that had just been done previously, like a couple weeks before of that first barn smoker. And there were some people that I think were genuinely worried that this would lead to a degradation in the quality of the Drew Estate brand, because it's, you know, I mean, Swisher Sweets are Swisher Sweets. You know what you're getting with a Swisher Sweet. And there was a fear that perhaps, you know, maybe either he would get, Jonathan Drew would get paid off and not be around the brand, or they wouldn't let him be around the brand, or whatever. But, I mean, he's very much still front and center, and it's clear that he's very engaged in the entire process from after they harvest the tobacco and start actually figuring out what they're going to do with it.
Well, and I'm glad they kept the price low for the whole barn smoker.
Absolutely.
Or actually the price correct, because if for some reason they're ever listening to this, I don't want them to think that the price is too low.
No, it's a very fair price.
Right. Absolutely fair price.
I mean, even our friend Buddy, who does not smoke cigars, thought that the price was very good.
Mm-hmm.
And he hates spending money on anything. Even people he loves. So.
Well, I mean, you know, again, for all the cigars you get, for the free swag, for the free food.
And the experience,
and
the knowledge.
And the experience. I mean, why not? Why not?
Couldn't agree with you more.
I mean, so, what, we're both, like, maybe almost halfway through?
Mm-hmm.
Have you noticed a difference? Because I really haven't.
I think not any difference, yes. I think that that's accurate. I would say that it's still pretty mellow with a little bit of pepper.
Yeah.
But nothing that extreme.
There's clearly some sort of animal in your garage.
You mean the barn?
In the barn.
I think it's in the fan, though.
Probably.
Well, it's all right, as long as it doesn't come out and attack us. Last time we were in here, a groundhog came in.
Yeah.
But I think my wife rounded all of them up, so it's not that. and nothing can come from underneath, which that's what I would be worried about particularly. I mean, the only other thing that could come is like a bat maybe or something from upstairs, but I don't think that that would happen.
Whatever.
Anyway. Yes, so the Marin is new because I have a new house. And to say new house, I mean, again, an old house that is new to me. Built in 1871 here in my village in northern Rhode Island.
Yes.
Very happy with it. We've been here now since March, which is hard to believe. Feels like it hasn't been that long. I don't know. But anything. Everything's going great. I've got a Marin now.
That's true.
Hopefully not too many animals are
it's
living in it.
It's closer to my work.
Yes,
which I appreciate.
Which is new to you as well.
Correct. My new job at a four-year university, no longer working at the community colleges.
Not that there's anything wrong with working at community colleges.
There's nothing. I'm all about community colleges, especially now that Rhode Island has passed the whole 2 years free community college.
That's right. That would have been really good for you.
For what?
Well, when you were, if, you know.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Yeah, like you could have.
I mean, I say it now. If I could do it again, I would have saved money going to community college for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that just seems the much smarter choice. But, whatever. That's what happens when community colleges have bad stigmas.
And they shouldn't.
They should not. So, other new things. I started a strenuous life challenge.
This is correct. And you've made a few posts about this.
I have.
Now, obviously, the strenuous life refers to
sitting back, smoking cigars.
Yeah, well, that's my strenuous life. which then could lead to my 600-pound life if
you mowed the lawn today.
I did.
There's a lot of lawn to mow.
It is. I was mowing that lawn good, too. Not going to be like a beaver pelt down on my lawn today.
That's right.
Tell you that. Strenuous life refers to a mantra of our favorite president, Theodore Roosevelt, who talked about living a strenuous life, you know, being active outdoors, basically being aggressive towards life's challenges and challenging yourself.
Right.
Which is very apropos for what this particular challenge and system is all about, right, John?
Yeah, and it's a, you know, for this whole challenge, it's a one-year, essentially, program. Where you can win different things along the way. it's kind of like the Boy Scouts where you get badges for different programs you accomplish, whatever. But along with it, you have to do an hour of physical activity a day, which has kind of been a kick in the butt from doing the opposite of an hour of physical activity a day. It's a lot more difficult than I thought it would be. But it's nice. It's causing me to get in shape. This week's challenge is to do the
World War II.
Yeah, World War II fitness test.
Which you do if you were joining up or being drafted, I guess, as well,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, to make sure that you were fit enough.
Basic training.
Right. And it's, I attempted it, like, kind of attempted it Monday to see how difficult it would be. Because my goal is to do it Friday. Which is probably not smart, because that's after 4 days of barbell training. So I'm sure my muscles are just going to be dead anyway.
They're going to give up on you?
Yeah. Well, it's a pull-up. I don't remember the last time I did a pull-up.
Yeah, that would be probably high school.
Right. And one pull-up is a fail. So it needs to be like 10 pull-ups, and that's not going to happen.
Negative.
Push-ups, sit-ups, but not the sit-ups with your knees bent, like flat sit-ups, like Undertaker sit-ups.
Ooh.
And that
dead man sit-ups.
Yep, dead man sit-ups. And that just sounds terrible.
It does.
And then squat jumps and burpees. Like, I'm going to end up with 0 points, but it's fine.
At least
you tried.
Because
then I'll take it a year from now when the challenge is over.
And you'll fail again. And
as long as I get one pull-up,
okay.
I'll be fine.
All right.
Yeah, so that's my whole thing.
Well, I mowed the lawn, so.
You did.
I made my wife happy and my lawn happy, which is, and my body unhappy.
Good.
But
those
that's
are
good.
All good things.
They are good. I'd much rather my wife be happy and my body be unhappy than my body be happy and my wife
right.
be unhappy.
And at some point, I'm going to
yes.
cause you to go to the gym with me.
You will.
So that this way, when it comes to the 100-yard dash between you and Buddy.
Oh, well.
Already you will beat him.
Well, I mean, do I have to, like, now wait 5 years for him to be fully recovered? Like,
probably.
What is the... Because before and for anyone who doesn't know, Buddy, who we've been obviously talking about now and again, who was on some of these podcasts,
yep.
was in a horrendous motorcycle accident that he only survived because...
Because he's so fat?
Well, that's what he thinks. But really, he only survived because of the supreme quality build of his Russian-made...
Tank.
German-designed, and by German... We actually do mean actual Nazi-designed
right.
Motorcycle.
Yes.
Because in World War II, the Russians just stole the design from the German Nazis and then made copies of them. And those copies are still being made by the Ural Company, which is actually it's a very nice-looking motorcycle. I have to give it to him.
I wonder if those bikes are going to make a big comeback with the alt-right.
Yeah, I don't know. There's a lot going on there,
Marn
though.
Thinking.
God. Also, of course, there's lots of horrible things going on in the news. Specifically with that person who, well, thankfully he's not occupying the White House at this exact moment, but he's just at the place that he owns in New York. But yeah, there's a lot of really bad vitriolic stuff going on that I guess shouldn't be all that surprising based on things that he said in the past. And just who he is as a person. But it's still incredibly disappointing, because even if he felt that way, you'd think maybe he wouldn't be saying it so vociferously out loud. But no, he has no shame and no brain.
Right.
And the people around him cannot control him whatsoever, and it's just a complete shit show.
Yeah.
Essentially.
And here we are. Things will only go downhill.
It's a road to ruin, for sure.
But, you know, as I thought when I went to South Carolina for a conference a couple months ago and saw all the Confederate statues and the signs that said slaves were sold here.
Which was everywhere.
Right.
Which is unbelievable.
The first thing I thought of was, why isn't all of this gone? Why?
Because in their minds, they never lost.
It's incredible. Well, and then who had... I was watching something today. Maybe it was John Oliver with Last Week Tonight.
Mm-hmm.
That was talking about... Oh, no, it was a CNN post. That was talking about what kids are taught in school, in the rural schools in the South. And a lot of them are taught... Not that... Obviously that the South lost, but it wasn't really a loss.
Oh, God.
I mean, how true that is, I don't know. It seemed it from the interview, but...
That's horrible. I mean, that's the other thing, too, is he's all about, like, he hates losers, right? He kept calling President Obama a loser all the time, and other people losers, Rosie O'Donnell.
Yeah.
Usually fat pig losers, right. You know, like, just some right. slur about their appearance or who they are as a person, and then calling them a loser. All of these people are interested in supporting a movement that lost.
Yep.
And, like, I don't know how you can square that away with his love of winning. Like, he said we'd be so sick of winning, but yet you're backing losers. Right. And not recent losers, like, losers from 152 years ago.
Yep.
Nope. That's just how it is.
Right, just back the losers. I mean, and what was on Last Week Tonight was the whole, they had North Korea. That they were talking about what students in North Korea are learning.
No, they're learning that we started the war with them.
Right.
And that everything was our fault. And basically...
Did you watch that one?
No, I just know this.
Ugh.
That it's unbelievable. Well, again, they're such a closed society, they can be taught anything. Like, in the South, at least, maybe there's Wi-Fi at the come-and-go gas station that somebody can use to, like, get some information out there.
But as we've talked about before... They're not going there to get the information that's out there. They're going to get the information that they want.
Correct, yes. Which is the whole problem with information in general these days, is that people are only interested in finding information that backs up viewpoints they already have, and then turn away from any information, even if it's true and accurate information, that is somehow in opposition to what their actual thinking might be. Which is horrible.
Yep. It's just... I don't know. I don't know how... One, there's so many Confederate monuments, and two, why they're not being all taken down immediately.
Well, they did say the interesting thing about the Confederate monuments are that they aren't, they don't start popping up until the turn of the century. So the early 1900s through the 1930s is when you see a lot of these monuments being built. So the idea was is that they're being built for two reasons. One, because they want to venerate these people, who many of them were horrible people that owned owned other people and had beliefs about, you know, the kind of brain power that that African Americans have and what their worth was as human beings, which is just horrible to think that anybody could think that. But also to be used because the people who actually fought in the war were dying off. So they didn't have any firsthand knowledge of what it was like and what had actually happened. So essentially, I think what people were getting at was is that they wanted to deliberately instill fake news or fake history with these monuments by venerating Confederate generals, Confederate officials, or Southerners who, like, I think today in Baltimore, four statues were taken down overnight that had something to do with the Confederacy. One of them was actually of former Supreme Court Justice Roger B. Taney, who was the deciding vote in the Plessy versus Ferguson case that said that, you know, basically black people have no rights at all, which is horrendous. And so it's just like, it's hard to believe that they're really not necessary. I mean, you don't see statues to Great Britain here.
Right. You don't see Nazi statues in Germany.
You don't. You don't see, you know, Austria-Hungary statues probably in France or something. Like, it just, it doesn't make any sense.
No.
It's never made any sense. And it's just one of those things that I think being so far removed from that kind of culture makes it difficult to understand. Because in the North, and especially in New England, like, okay, there are, and let's be fair, there are a lot of idiots here that fly, like, Confederate flags.
Yeah.
And especially here in the northern part of Rhode Island, or the western part of Massachusetts, or Connecticut in general.
Right.
There's a fair amount.
All of Connecticut.
Speaking of all of this in Connecticut, what did we see on the road in Connecticut?
Which one? The guy in the truck smoking his pot?
No, that was hilarious. But no, the license plate.
Oh, yeah, the Covfefe license plate.
It was great. It was a great license plate. So the day it happened, he must have gone to the DMV and gotten it. Like, it was incredible. It was, I think it was like a Dodge Challenger? Or
Yeah.
I think. It was a nice car. It had the Covfefe license. I was just like, I didn't think I saw it right at first. And then I was like, and you missed it. Because obviously you were navigating. I was like, shit. So then we had to take the Taurus up to as fast as it could go to get up to Covfefe.
But even in Connecticut, I could not believe how South Connecticut was.
It's rural. I think that so much of these movements co-opt on themselves. So, you know, like, people who love the Confederacy are also likely to be racist, obviously. They're also likely to be people who were Tea Partiers, which means they're people that hate the federal government.
Yeah.
Believe that they should just stay the hell out. They're also usually gun enthusiasts.
Yep.
So they're members of the NRA. So, like, all of these groups, like, if there are Venn diagrams of all the members of all of these groups, like, they all meet up somewhere. Most, probably just south. or rural. Because rural could be used as south because so much of the south is rural.
Right.
Because they never really had heavy manufacturing or anything like that, other than coal country, essentially, in the Rust Belt. But other than that, I mean, there wasn't much heavy manufacturing or anything. That was all north. And in those areas, even around here, mills and stuff, I mean, usually those were in and around major metropolitan areas.
Right.
For whatever state it might be. whether that's you know, Worcester or Providence, even Boston. I mean, Lowell, any of these places. So it's just enormously. It just makes you so angry to think that this is something that we still have to be talking about, and it is, because obviously prejudice and all these other things still exist this far out. But if one good thing came out of all of this, it's that now President Obama has the most retweeted tweet of all time, quoting Nelson Mandela. So at least there's a record that actually people do, much more people care about having some sense about this issue, about not being on the side of hatred and bigotry and fascist, neo-Nazi, Confederacy-loving people than the former. Unfortunately, a very large group of the minority in that group are very loud and like to create conflict and hysteria.
Yep.
And I did read an article today talking about how they feel like the reason why things are seemingly maybe bubbling over here is that one thing millennials are blamed for killing many things, but one of the things they say that millennials are killing is the trade in all of this racist, bigoted stuff, because it's just not in the makeup of most, even people that maybe live in these areas where traditionally it's a thing, that maybe some access to the internet, getting away from it for a while, has changed attitudes enough that a lot of these white supremacist, Nazi-loving people are worried that they're not going to be able to get numbers, really, like they had before. Because the dissatisfaction and anger is really more wealth-driven than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that isn't as easily pinned on minority groups as maybe some other things. So, again, if there's some sliver of hope to see that it's petering in a way, is a good thing.
Well, it'll be interesting when we are grandparents.
Yeah, God. Well, I mean, look, it'll still exist, because...
Well, it's never not going to exist.
Yes, but you'd hope, certainly, that the numbers would be seriously degraded, and that things like what happened this weekend wouldn't be possible anymore.
We should just let Obama be king.
I love that idea.
Should just let him be king. That would have been perfect. Oh, well.
Can't always get what you want.
Can't. Which, again, as you pointed out, should be Donald Trump's entrance.
Yeah, well, he's just going to get rid of Hail to the Chief.
Right, replace it with "You can't always get what you want." Perfect.
Both sides would agree with that. what else is going on? Ric Flair, we want to send big, big heartfelt messages of support to the Nature Boy, who is struggling right now.
Well, you know, you can't live that lifestyle all these years.
All the...
The wheeling and dealing, kiss stealing,
plane,
diamond ring wearing, can't
limo
ride
it. It's true.
Can't do it.
Well, at least Nick, the third man, as we call him, our friend Nick, was able to interview him before all of this happened. That was just last week, I think, or 2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago, I think.
2 weeks ago, yeah. So, but yes, we are definitely wishing that the Nature Boy have a healthy future ahead of him, hopefully. But things aren't looking so great at the moment.
Right. Just give us a couple more years, Nate.
That's all we... Woo! Just hoping it happens.
Right.
Hoping that it happens.
But yeah, I guess that's it.
Yeah. Well, we covered a lot of ground.
We did.
We're going to continue to cover a lot of ground. These will obviously be much more regular now. Hoping to get one out at least once a week.
Mm-hmm.
We do have one coming up. We can actually tease because we've already done it, which is actually talking a lot about Buddy and his motorcycle accident, which is interesting to listen to just because, again, it's horrifying, and we're very glad he's
that
okay.
He's alive.
Because even though he's wearing Alabama mediums, which in the North are at least triple to quadruple XLs,
yep.
But we're going on Walmart sizing in Alabama. So Alabama mediums.
Alabama meets.
He has to be comfortable because of the extra gear he's wearing, as he recovers.
Correct.
So we'll talk to him, which will be exciting. And, of course, talk a little bit about maybe what we're smoking at the time.
Yeah.
And, yeah, we're happy to be back. And we've got the Marn now, so this will make it a lot easier when the temperatures start to go down again. Hopefully there aren't too many animals living in here, which there shouldn't be. And we'll be good to go.
So. Yeah, and we'll each hopefully have our own little other podcasts.
We're looking... We're
keep our content filled.
We're definitely looking for more content.
Right. And so I guess final notes on cigars. It stayed insanely consistent throughout the entire thing.
Smoke profile, excellent.
Yep.
I definitely do think it's mellowed out here in the last third. I'm not getting nearly as much pepper or earth. I mean, it could be that my mouth also got used to it, so maybe that's it. Another fantastic smoke from Drew Estate, which I think I can safely say we've never had a bad cigar from.
Nope.
So we'll be talking about all the great Drew Estate cigars as we smoke them from the Barn Smoker, and probably rehash a little bit of the Barn Smoker each time we have it because it's such a great event.
It's very true.
Pleasure to be back doing this with you, John.
Yeah, always a good time.
Thank you for coming, and as always, thank you for listening to this edition of the Gents Confab Podcast.